Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, and we're kicking the Yankees' asses all week long here. I'm actually going to the game on Thursday. Next Friday, we return with the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Pac-Man, scratch-off, still have these. Going to have them at Fadley's next Friday as the Arizona Diamondbacks come in. And the Splash Man bobblehead thing is happening. And Luke is, you know, I keep saying you're up late and whatnot. But, like, these games really do kind of get over to reason. My wife landed at the airport at like 8:55 on Tuesday night from her family trip. And I'm like there picking her up, and I got last out in the car and, you know, sort of like got home and had a normal evening. I'm excited about coming to the ballpark on Thursday. And certainly if you're my age and you watch baseball and have watched any of the ickiness of the last 30 years, this is an absolute pleasure to think about going to the ballpark or coming to the ballpark. Not as many people are going as Mr. Rubenstein probably thought in the beginning because, hey, man, I mean, we talked about this when Angelos ran the team. He wasn't the only problem or the only reason people weren't going. But it is very, very heartening to see them play this style of baseball. And closer by committee, no problem. Dean Kramer, give me the ball. You know, stare me down, Soto. Let's see what happens the next day. I mean, This is going to be feisty before it's all over with. I noticed that when Soto hit the ball off the warehouse on Tuesday night.
That was a blast. I was saying to someone in the press box that was probably in my top 10 most impressive home runs I've seen at Camden Yards. And, you know, I haven't been there for every single game, but I've been there for most of them over the last 11, 12 years, something along those lines.
And you've seen some bad pitching to left-handed hitting.
I've seen some very bad pitching. Yes, no question about it. To left-handed or right-handed hitters. But Dean Kramer, I mean, really good outing. I think in this day and age, anytime you have a starting pitcher that goes seven innings against the lineup of that caliber, it's impressive. But especially when you consider the Orioles' need in the bullpen, we knew that Cano and Danny Coulomb were both going to be down considering how much they had pitched here recently. Had to give them a night off. I mean, you just had to. You can't run those guys into the ground before Kentucky Derby Day. So those guys were down. Craig Kimbrell did a pretty extensive workout before the game. Looks like he's going to avoid the IL. He looked pretty good. I had my binoculars out, was watching from the press box. He was throwing in the bullpen. But
I want to picture somebody with you with the binoculars. You look like Charlie Ekman at the track.
Yeah.
That's what I want to look like.
But what I concluded from that workout was he threw so much that I very much thought, okay, he's not pitching tonight, though. He might be okay, and he might be ready to go for the rest of the series. And we'll hopefully whatever was plaguing him, whether it was the back or a mechanical thing, whatever it was, he straightened out. But could tell pretty easily that I don't think he's pitching tonight because he wouldn't be throwing this much. It'd be more of a just touch and feel kind of throw if that were the case. So they're
part
down
of that might be how sore he is today too. Just, hey, let's see.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, you always have to watch it. I mean, any pitcher after they throw at any point, there's always that question of how do they feel the next day. But when you're down your top three relievers in a bullpen that, let's face it, we've talked about and we've said, they don't have a whole lot of depth in terms of reliable arms as it is, high leverage arms as it is. For Dean Kramer to give them seven innings, give up two runs the way that he did, and then to turn it over to first Keegan Aiken and then Jacob Webb, who was on the roster bubble throughout the spring. He's out of options. Came over from the Angels last year. Remember, his first month or so, first 3 weeks, he was with the Orioles last summer. It was late last summer. He pitched really well, and he was actually in that, you know, in that group of relievers from last year's bullpen, even the first couple weeks after Batista got hurt that you trusted. But then he struggled late in the regular season, struggled in the postseason, and, you know, he was on the roster bubble. They held on to him because generally, guys that are out of options, you're going to give the benefit of the doubt. They're going to win the tiebreaker, right? But he comes in and strikes out Aaron Judge, comes out for the ninth, strikes out Stanton, strikes out Anthony Rizzo, and then gets a ground ball for the four-out save. I mean, it's another one of those examples where you look at that game and you say, on paper, not a whole lot makes sense in terms of thinking that Jacob Webb's going to be the guy that gets you the save in that spot. But at the end of the season or come September, if you and the Yankees are neck and neck, or even if you've won the division, or you've sewed up a wild card spot, whatever it ends up being. And obviously they want to win this division. This is one of those games you'll look back to and say, might have stolen that one, just from a circumstantial standpoint, as far as where they were with their bullpen. But a major credit to him. But again, Dean Kramer is the one who really made it possible. And he pitched really, really well, getting through seven innings for just the second time this season. So, you know, you get through the first two games of a four-game set with victories. You have Corbin Burnes going in game three. Boy, you love your chances that at worst you have a phenomenal opportunity here to at least take three out of four. And if Burnes does what he's capable of doing, then we're talking maybe sweep. If I don't know, we don't know officially, but I assume Kyle Bradish going in the finale. So big time win for the Orioles. And yes, they did it against your boy, Nestor Cortez.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just said the word, you just said the magic word. And, you know, from the minute I tuned into the pregame show, and Melanie Newman was really getting off calling him Nasty Nestor. You know what I mean? So, and she has no idea who I am or whether I exist. I've never met her. I don't know her. I see her on the television like everybody else. But then, you know, then Palmer gets in on it, and Arnold, you know, in the car, Arnold's in on it. Brett Hollander just kept calling him by his first name. They never call him Cortez. They only call him Nestor, which I think's just, I don't know. I've lived long enough that somewhere out there, there's a kid named after Charlton Heston who finally has a guy, you know what I mean? And Heston cursed that. I finally have a guy. So let me have my moment. And he's actually good. So, like, and he's going to pitch 10 years in the big leagues if his arm doesn't fall off. So he's already, what, 4 or 5 years into this. He's already the one thing that I didn't do in New York, and I should have done this. I was in New York on Saturday. I should have taken the train up to 161, gotten off like you and I did. Look for that rat that we found back during the playoffs years ago. He's probably still alive. Probably eating 20 cats by now. And all of those gift shops up there, stands and the bar and all that stuff up there, they had Nasty Nestor shirts. Like lots of different kinds of Nasty Nestor shirts. I really should have gone up there and looked through the, you know, $7 bargain bin and at least come home with one or two. You know, next time I go to New York, that's what I'm doing. I'm going to stop, get my favorite Indian food up on 108th Street, and then I'm going to 161. So I'm going to come home with a Nasty Nestor shirt because I felt bad that I didn't have one last night. And I felt really bad that I didn't come and give him an old Get Nasty shirt, too. So not just that he's Nestor. The fact that they call him Nasty Nestor cracks me up.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing you need to get in addition to the T-shirt is a lot of the fans wear the Nestor Cortez mustache. Yeah. In fact, it was the funniest thing. So the gate
I should
opened
do that for Halloween. I should be Nestor Cortez for Halloween.
There you go. There you
go.
I
wouldn't look good in Yankee gear, though. I don't think I would look good.
But the gates opened. I guess the gates opened an hour before first pitch, and one of it was a pair of female Yankee fans right behind home plate who were amongst the first fans to enter the ballpark. And I did a double take because I just looked and, you know, I wasn't, you know, looked up from my laptop and I saw they're wearing mustaches. And I was just like, wait a second. I just did a double take. I'm like, Nestor Cortez, they got the mustache. So it was funny to see.
Have you caught on to the fact as to why people are dressed like cows or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, the Muth thing for Colton Cowser, all of that is just, it's taken off. I mean, even when he just bloops a ball in now, let alone if he hits a home run, I mean, it's taking off big time. Yeah,
it's like
the milkman costume
and like, yeah, oh yeah,
well,
not just
cow outfits and the milkman costumes. I mean, it's, you know, it's taken off. It's a life of its own. There's no doubt about it. Whenever you have something like that, but you know, to get back to the action on the field, Orioles, who, you know, their first few times against Nestor Cortez, granted, this was a couple years ago when they were still not very good. They had their issues against him, but they've gotten to him a little bit more the last couple times. I mean, it wasn't like it was an offensive explosion against him on Tuesday night, but they did enough. And certainly, you know, when you're talking about going up against a quality pitcher like that, and, you know, same thing you could say about Monday night's game. You know, you want to try to, you know, you get a couple runs and hope your pitching can hold up. And the Orioles were able to do that. So just such an encouraging win all the way around. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention how good the defense was, especially early in the game. A couple of those double plays the Orioles turned. I mean, let's face it, for as well as Kramer finished, as well as he pitched overall, it's a lot of loud contact early in that game, and the Orioles turn a couple double plays. I mean, how about Mateo getting to cover first base on a 3 364 double play. You don't hear that one too often. And in contrast, we've seen the Yankees kick the ball around a little bit. So we talked about this the other day, how we were kind of talking about how each of these teams are perceived. And I said to you, I think the Orioles should be perceived more favorably. That's a reason why. They're better defensively, more athletic, younger.
Well, it goes a long way having your ace on the hill, and then Thursday they're going to come back with, you know, the special occasion, and I'm going to be at Thursday's game. And I like, they're in a position here to not just win the series, but to your point, to establish that dominance May 1st, that we're the better team. We were the better team last year. We were the better team this week. We'll be the better team next week. We'll be the better team in October if we see you. That's where you want to be with Gunnar Henderson and Adley, with these alpha dogs who are 22 years old, that we've just never seen anything like this. Luke, I want to talk pitching with you and all that, but I just want to talk about the core of these players and how bad the franchise was and how bad the Astros were, how bad the White Sox are, or at least they were until last week, that when you get that first pick and you get it a couple years in a row and you get that second pick or that fifth pick, we lived through that. We were just here. You went to more of those games than anybody I know. God bless you. But I'm trying to think in the history of the game. I'm thinking about when Fred Lynn and Jim Rice came up, right? And they fell into a lineup that already had Dewey Evans and had all of that. I'm thinking about the Cubs, you know, 10 years ago when all of their guys, Schwarber and all those guys came at the same time. There haven't been a lot of these. You know what I mean? Like, you can buy championships, you can buy players. That's been going on for 50 years since free agency, that if you have money, you're the Angels, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Mets, the Phillies, they've bought players. Even the Padres went on a buying streak recently. But growing guys where you have this kind of talent under the age of 25, where you have blue chip players that have panned out and all arrive at the same time. I don't know. You tell me. You're an historian like me. I'm scratching my head and I'm thinking, like, I remember when Yount came up and Brett came up with the Royals and they had Frank White. They had some nice players, but they didn't have five guys who are going to hit 25, 30 home runs, hit 300, have 400 on base percentage, five tool kind of players in most of these cases. Not all of them run really well, but at least four out of five tools.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll continue to provide the caveat that it's early. I don't know if they're going to have five guys hit 300, but your point is absolutely spot on from a standpoint of guys that can go, let's put aside the home runs. How about the speed? I mean, Gunnar Henderson, at least 30-30, you know, and he might hit 40 home runs, but at this point, he's got a chance to be a guy who steals 30 bases. I mean, Cedric Mullins already was a 30-30 guy a few years ago. Jordan Westberg can steal some bases. So Colton
Cowles also changes things first to third on a single, too. And we've
seen that about it. Yeah. And that, and again, that goes – and this is something I should have brought up because we talked about this the other day. I said the only thing in Orioles history that reminded me of this, you know, in a small way was the 96 Orioles with the home runs. That team had very little speed other than Brady Anderson and Robbie Alomar at the top of the lineup. I mean, it was – rest of the guys were Cal and Eddie Murray at the end of their career and all that. But this team – I mean, these guys can run. Gunnar Henderson is deceptively fast. I think you're seeing that more and more as he swipes bags, takes the extra base. Same with Westberg. I mean, we've talked about it even the last couple of years. Ryan Mountcastle, for what he profiles as, which is, you know, a slugging first baseman – he runs really well for what he is, for his body type. He runs really well.
He picked the ball. So, you mentioned good defense. We didn't give him a star. He picked the ball in a double play.
Really nice pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nice pick and started, you know, nice pick to finish the first double play in the first inning. And then in the second inning, a really nice stab to start the double play. So on a ball that was hit hard. But, I mean, they're athletic. Hyde talked about this the other day. Their defense the first month of the season has been a little choppier than you would expect, but I think in terms of their ability, the defense should be really, really good as the year went on. And the same thing happened last year. April of last year, defense was a little shaky and was really good as the season went on. So I just, they're a team that on the hitting side, on the fielding side, you know, we can talk about the pitching and we'll continue to talk about the pitching. Everyone talks about their pitching. Even the teams that are really good from a pitching standpoint are always asking, do we have enough pitching? Because we know how fragile it can be. But beyond that, they don't have many weaknesses. And there's just so much to really like. In contrast, you look at a team like the Yankees, who are relying on veteran players. They have guys in their lineup who either aren't strong defensively or don't even play defense, like Giancarlo Stanton, because he can't run anymore. I mean, look at a couple of the plays he's been thrown out on. There was a 9-6 fielder's choice on Monday night because he couldn't run from first to second on a one-hop line drive to Santander. So you don't have guys on the Orioles roster that you talk about in those terms. Now, you know, not every player is going to be an all-star, but 1-9, or at least 1-8 right now, you feel so good about this lineup. You feel so good about who they're putting out there. And to go back to kind of your original premise, it's all so organically done from a standpoint of not going out and signing free agents. It's still a very low payroll, and obviously that will become a more pertinent topic as time goes on. But to do that, yes, with your top five picks that you've had, but also Gunnar Henderson, look how many teams could have drafted him back in 2019. You know, he was the Orioles' second round pick. Let's just remember that. And now we're talking about him maybe being one of the best three to five players in the game right now. So it really is so exciting from that standpoint, and understanding, yes, they have more on the way. Yes, new ownership in terms of imagining how high the payroll could go, or at least higher than it's been, you know, if things are managed and run well. So, I mean, there's just so much to like. And, you know, first litmus test of the season, you know, when the Yankees come in and the Yankees are off to a good start and you've won the first two, you know, if even things don't go well the next 2 days, you have a split. Not that that's the goal, but that's the worst case scenario now. So, you know, it's a good way to end the month of April. And, you know, this team is, as we're right about at the 30-game mark right now, I mean, you have to be really, really pleased with it, where they are. However, that's where I'll go back to my original caveat. It's still early, and there's still a lot of season to navigate. I'll remind you, last year, where the Tampa Bay Rays were at this point in time, looking like they were the 84 Tigers running away with things, and the Orioles caught them. So, you know, it's still, there's a lot of baseball to play, but that's why it's so important to win a game like they did on Tuesday night, where your bullpen's blown up, you know, outmanned, shorthanded, however you want to describe it, and you still come away with a win against a really quality ball club. I mean, that's, again, those are the kind of games that over the course of the season, you're able to do that from time to time. That's when a 90-win team turns into a 98-win team, right? I mean, that can be the difference between being good and a wild card team, or being great and being one of the top two who gets that first round bye. So, you know, we'll see how the rest of this series plays out, but definitely encouraging win on Tuesday night and Monday, you know, really encouraging considering it hasn't been how the Orioles have been winning games, which was scoring a ton of runs. You know, the offense has been more modest to start this series, and they've still come away with two wins.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. He'll be at the ballpark. I don't know when the Ravens are going to roll the football back out because Chad Steele took me off the email list, so I don't even know. But you can tell me when you're going to be out there, and guys will be running around in shorts. But in the meantime, we got a couple more baseball games. Orioles go to Cincinnati this week. We'll be back doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next Friday. Brought to you by our friends at Liberty Pure, as well as Jiffy Lube and the Maryland Lottery. We'll have the Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. That'll be next Friday. Pitching. Starting pitching, Means, Bradish in the house, in uniform, smiling widely. What is your expectation over the next week for usage, insertion? The weather looks like it's going to hold up. Not going to be rainouts or anything weird going on here, at least in the near short term, to move pitching around. What's the Hyde plan here?
Well, he won't reveal it yet. We've asked him. He's not ready to announce it. It's become very Ravens-like, very NFL-like in terms of not announcing things until you absolutely have to.
Well, they wouldn't want you to bet on it until, you know, you get a start.
Right. Yeah, so, sure. Yeah. There's always that, especially more so now in today's modern age. But
how can I be a cynic? Hey, you know, how can a guy who's been doing this 40 years, that's been thrown out of both places for, I don't know, the color of my skin, my hair, how can I be a cynic about these guys? How would that be possible?
On Thursday afternoon, my full expectation is we're going to see Kyle Bradish. I mean, the Orioles, he's there. You know, I've seen him walk through the clubhouse, albeit very quickly, but he's in Baltimore. He's ready to be activated. My assumption is You're going to see him on Thursday afternoon in his 2024 debut. John Means is also with the club. I expect we're going to see him activated for, if not the Cincinnati series, right after that. You know, so they're both going to be back, presumably in the rotation. It does make things, you know, it's a good problem to have because Albert Suarez has pitched well. Cole Irvin's pitched well, but I assume those are the two guys that move to the bullpen. You know, and you'll probably see, well, Ramirez will be one of the guys to go from the pen. I mean, that's kind of the easy call to make. They clearly don't have a lot of trust in him. And I thought something that was also telling from Tuesday night, I did not see Mike Bauman warm up at all. And obviously it was a close game. We've talked a lot about Mike Bauman. He's someone that at this time last year, I was hoping to see emerge. I was hoping to see him take a step to become a guy that you might be able to trust in the seventh, eighth inning, occasionally the ninth, maybe if you're a little shorthanded. And it just hasn't happened for him. He's out of options. You know, is it him? We're going to see. But certainly those are the two guys that I'm kind of looking to potentially go off the roster. And then you see Suarez and Cole Irvin go to the bullpen. You know, is it possible they have something else in mind for John Means, let's say, for example? It's possible until we hear announced officially. And we know that Means, until the very end of his rehab stint, you know, the results at least were very, very shaky. And that's the kindest way to put it. But he did finish off his last start at Norfolk, was very good, looked very John Means-like. So, like I said, I think Bradish, we'll see at the end of this homestand. And I think we're going to see John Means, I would assume, this weekend in Cincinnati. But until it's official, we don't know for sure. But both those guys are with the club. They're not getting ready to make another rehab start. So it's imminent for both. And I think now it's just a case of how do they look performance-wise? And the big picture question for both, how are they feeling physically? You know, it's one thing to talk about getting them back on a major league mound and facing a major league team. But when those competitive juices take over, when it's a completely uncontrolled environment, how are they feeling and how are they recovering? That's still, at least in Bradish's case, you know, knowing that he never had surgery or anything like that, right? I mean, he's avoided that, knock on wood. But knowing that he had a UCL injury, there's going to be some collective holding of breath for a while, I think, with Kyle Bradish. Even if he looks really good, again, it goes back to how's he feel the next day? How's he feel after his bullpen session in between starts? So, but just the fact that both those guys are to this point now where they're ready to be activated, they're ready to pitch, I think that's great news, especially in the case of Bradish, because I think all of us, when Mike Elias made that announcement, what was it, February 15th, 16th, whatever it was, I think everyone at that point was thinking the worst, bracing for the worst, thinking, oh, wow, they're not going to have Bradish at all this year. And look, that's not to say he's going to throw 140 innings either. But the fact that he's at least progressed to this point 2.5 months later where he's ready to start and has only missed a month of the season, that's probably the best case scenario Mike Elias would have given you back on February 15th.
It is fascinating that, you know, Elias's words every, you know, he comes out once or twice a week and says a little something, unlike DaCosta, who's a coward and continues to run from me. And I would say this from Elias's standpoint, from the very beginning of the team getting good, whether this time last year I'm going to CEO club meetings and he's there and it's all about Stowers and why is Aaron Frazier on the team? And it's always around the fringe. What are we going to do with Mateo and Urias? We're going to deal Mountcastle. That's where we were a year ago, right? Year and a half ago. Now we're at the Bauman's going to get claimed by the Cubs or something, right? Like, you know, like we're going to wind up losing players because they're out of options. And you have these pitchers backlogged to get in, but we're really not sure because, I mean, let's be honest, both of them have been injured in some way that they're not what we think of them on John Means' no-hitter day in Seattle, where he was at that point, where he could be again. Same thing with Bradish. And then you got Kerstad, who's been sitting up here for a week, getting the donut on the bat once in a while and sitting back down. And, you know, I don't know Hyde at all. I haven't met him. I've only been literally in a room with him twice, when he came in before the game in Arlington and when he left the game, because they wouldn't let me in the locker room so I could be in the interview room. So I saw him. But I don't, you know, I don't know if he's gruff or I don't know what to even say. He's not Buck for sure. as far as an engagement level, but he almost looks a little much like John, a little, oh, you're going to ask me about the prospect we buried on the edge of the bench for a week and expect me to give you explanations on it. He didn't seem to be, hey, he's getting big league per diem. He's on the team. When it comes time, we'll play. I like that he said, got a pretty good ball club here. I like that because that's true.
I was just going to say, I think that's the truth. I
That
said,
is the
hey,
truth. Yeah.
when they called him up, what did I say to you? I said to you at the time, I don't think he's going to play much because who are you going to sit? Now, I think we could certainly talk about Santander, who, since his three double day in Kansas City a couple weekends ago, has really scuffled. I know he had a double, even though that was an error, but it was a double in the second inning on Tuesday night. But that said, when Kerstad started in Anaheim, his first game with the club, remember, he had a couple defensive misplays. He didn't get credited with an error, but you saw that that's why the Orioles have, I think they've kind of told you, and I think the overall sentiment with him is chances
He's a
are he's
first
going to be
baseman.
a DH, or maybe he can develop. And he's played some first in the minors, but I don't think they're not ready to stick him there yet, and they have Mountcastle anyway. So, but this was the problem. I
Would have been
think.
two plays that didn't get made on Tuesday night if Kerstad was playing first base,
I
right?
mean, that's right. So defense matters. Defense matters for this team. I mean, it does, especially when, their pitching is not top five in all of baseball. It's been solid. It's been good enough for the most part, but it's not elite in the way that their offense and their home run hitting ability has been elite. So that's just kind of where they are right now. I mean, and look, I'm the last guy that's going to sit here and say, bring up a prospect and sit him on the bench for a week, but it does speak to the logjam that they have. And I think it's tough because Ryan O'Hearn, we haven't talked about him a ton, but, and he didn't play on Tuesday night because they're facing a lefty, but he has killed the ball. I mean, go look at his Statcast profile and, how hard he's hitting the ball, barrel rate, all the nerdy stats, but also home runs, batting average, all that. He's been really, really good. And I think if in the most simplistic terms, he's probably the biggest one blocking Heston Kerstad right now because O'Hearn primarily DHs. And if Heston Kerstad's going to start, you'd like him to DH at this point in his career. So I think Hyde was being as blunt, as honest as he could be. He's not trying to crush the kid. He's not trying to bury him, but it's a matter of who do you want to sit
I think
to
they
play
probably told him
him?
that when he came up, hey, your coming up's a little different than Rutschman or these guys. We're bringing you up and we're starting your clock and you'll get a chance. And when you get a chance, come in and play. But to your, he'd rather be on the bench for a 100-win team in the big leagues, staying at the Cincinnati Westin on Friday night than he would rather be on a bus going to Tidewater. I still call it Tidewater. That cracks me up.
It's you're dating yourself when you say
I
that.
like
That's
that.
been a while,
I like that. That's good. Go
I
Mets.
mean, you just go back to who was he brought up for? Austin Hayes on the IL. Austin Hayes wasn't playing. Why? Because Colton Cowser's been an all-star in terms of his production so far. So, I mean, it's just where it is at this point. That's why when they brought him up, I did think, well, I like Heston Kerstad. I want to see him. I want to see him succeed. All that. He's a nice kid. He's been through a lot, as we've talked about, since being drafted. But again, who are you sitting down right now? And I'll hear Santander because he scuffled at the plate the last 2 weeks. But Heston Kerstad doesn't defend as well. And that's not that Santander is a gold glove right fielder, but he can throw. And we saw that on Monday night. And you trust him more out
I
there.
hate these
So,
3 and 4 tool players. What are we
yeah,
going to do with these 3 and 4 tool
exactly.
players?
So that's just, I mean, it speaks to where they are. It does speak to the bigger issue at work that going back to the offseason and in just in a big picture sense, you do want to be careful if you're Mike Elias from a big picture sense of not blocking all these guys at Triple A indefinitely, interminably, where you're just, they're just there. I mean, Kyle Stowers, I mean, think about the perception of him now compared to 2 years ago. He hasn't had an extended opportunity in the major leagues. And look, Kyle Stowers was never projected to be an all-star or anything like that. Let's be clear. But there's wanting to maintain depth, and there's having so much depth that even when a guy's called on, like Kerstad in this instance, he's still not playing at the major league level. So that's where you do look at this. You look at the state of the bullpen, you look at their pitching. the rotation, obviously, the outlook of the rotation's looking up right now with Bradish and Means coming back. What does that mean for the bullpen? We'll see. Maybe Albert Suarez goes to the pen. Maybe he works out well in that way. But I think at the same time, you do look at the big picture as far as what are the needs for this team. And I think bullpen, been saying it since the moment we heard from Mike Elias in mid-February. And I think that's still going to be what it is. But you do want to make sure you're extracting the proper value from these prospects at AAA. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But in the meantime, when you get contributions from bullpen arms like Jacob Webb on Tuesday night, and look, that doesn't mean Jacob Webb's going to be a big time arm for them the rest of the way, but you need these unexpected contributions, right? A hero, different hero every night, the magic of Orioles baseball, all that. They got that from Jacob Webb. When you look at what he did for them on Tuesday night, doing it against Judge, against the middle of that lineup for the Yankees in a two-run game. Really, really impressive and a big win for the O's.
All right, Luke's at the ballpark. I'll be at the ballpark. We are going to continue to talk about Ravens draft picks. We're going to continue to talk election around here. Please vote. It's very, very important that we take care of our society and vote. So I'll be pointing that out over the next week or two. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next Friday at Fadley Seafood. That'll be Friday, 2 until 5. Luke will join me down there. We'll have Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away from the Maryland Lottery. Had the shrimp salad last week. I'm going back for the crab cake next week. I've been in the mood for fish. I went to State Fair the other night to get some salmon. I wound up getting some steak, but I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. So big appreciation to all of our sponsors. The Crab Cake Tour is going to get back out on the road here in May, into June, into July. We've got big plans. If you haven't seen the 25th anniversary video and documentary, I would love for you to do that. I think you'll learn a lot. You'll laugh a lot. No, I see Bill Murray wearing his Cubs hat, riding the L train out of Wrigley southbound into the city the other night. And I'm like, Bill Murray made a cameo in our 25th anniversary documentary. So there's all sorts of little twists. Brooks is in there, and there's a little bit of Art Modell, a little Art Donovan, some nods to the past. Even my man John Buren came out on league night for bowling. They asked me up at Greenmount Bowl last week if I did any bowling. I said, John Buren came out on league night for our charity night. So and also, there's something about you seeing Nikolai Volkoff duck pin bowl for the first time in your life that must have been impressive to you, Lucas.
No question about it. No question about it.
You didn't know about that, did you? Did you know Nikolai Volkoff came out and bowl with us?
I remembered that. I didn't remember any pictures.
Dude,
or anything
all
like that.
I remember you is mentioned him and Dundalk. He pulls in. He's got his Russian stuff on, his hat. He's Nikolai Volkoff. He comes in. He walks in, and we're like, "You're gonna bowl." I never bowled with these balls before. Where do I get the shoes? They did not have shoes that fit Nikolai Volkoff. They did not. Like, the biggest shoe they had did not fit him. He bowl in his – if you look at that video of him bowling, you see him bowl, he's bowling in his work boots from Baltimore County. So, God bless Nikolai. RIP to Nikolai Volkoff, one of the good ones for all the wrestling people. Did a great wrestling piece last week with Brad Baluchin. It's up at Baltimore Positive. Please go check that out. And the aforementioned bowling alley was all about horse racing. Had a great horse racing conversation here this week with David Richardson, as well as Alan Foreman, about the past of the horse racing industry and the future and where it's going. Dick Girardi, one of my first workmates 40 years ago at Sports First of the Philadelphia Daily News, will be joining us this week to preview the Derby. By the way, the favorited horse in the Derby, his name is Fierceness. So after Nasty Nestor, I have Fierceness running for the Roses on Saturday. I am Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Whatever we feel like, it's Baltimore Positive. Stay with us. It's better than Jack Radio.